true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. You want to win that score sheet, you're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. My name is Ian Lefkowitz, and I'm your host, and I have to confess, I've been buying podcast listeners this whole time to make our product seem more viable. Joining me, as always, from Plymouth, Michigan, he's our killer compression algorithm, Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. Happy to be here. And, of course, from our nation's capital, he's our minimum viable product. It's Jared Weiss. Jared, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. I'm glad you didn't go for the easy Jared joke.
I don't see the resemblance. I mean, he is a painfully awkward man who mumbles a lot and is afraid of his own shadow. I don't see where that would fit with him.
It's funny because we know him, but the listeners are like, what? Why? What?
Yeah. So, okay. Beyond talking about HBO shows that are not that HBO show and not the other one either, how is everyone doing?
All right. Everything's good except for I sprained my ankle over the weekend, so I haven't been walking well, but otherwise I'm good.
Yeah, who needs to walk?
You know, I did a lot of hopping. It's fine.
Did you use crutches? Did you get a wheelchair?
I was offered a wheelchair when I was at the clinic, because the building where you go to see the doctor and the building where you go to get x-rayed are like across the parking lot from each other. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it was like excruciatingly painful to like touch my foot to the ground. So I was hopping everywhere. And they didn't have any crutches that fit me. The smallest ones they had were for 6'3 and taller, which definitely not going to work.
Did you go to the big and tall clinic?
No. And they offered to push me across the parking lot in a wheelchair, and I think I said something like, I sprained my ankle, but I'm still like ambulatory, and I would feel like worse being pushed around in a wheelchair than I will just hopping across the parking lot. So I hopped. And for those that don't know, like, I went to see people that work with my wife, so my poor wife got to hear about how obstinate I was in the clinic and how I hopped around everywhere.
So. I'm sure that's stunful.
Yeah.
She was probably shocked. No, I think she was just happy that I went to get x-rayed in the first place, because it's not very like me to get x-rayed, but it hurt, like, really badly. Mm. I've played sports all my life, and this is easily the worst I've ever messed up my ankle. So.
All right. Well, I hope you get better.
Yeah. I'm glad the listeners tuned in for.
Yeah. Not they hope you get better too. Not to bring this down immediately, but we're recording this today, so Phillies prospect Matt Imhoff was in the news today. Yeah. That, you know, as all of you listeners probably know, unfortunately, he lost an eye in a terrible, like, exercise band accident. And I was reading his Instagram post about it.
Yeah, no, it's true, Ben, but he's not making it.
Yeah.
What?
That's insane.
Yeah, and I was struck by, like, what good spirits he was in that post.
Yeah. I would not be.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, how many times I had complained, like, that day to that point. And it's like, well, you know, I've seen some setbacks, but, you know, everything is an opportunity, and it's a, you know, I'm happy to be here, and it's like, I had a cuticle that was, like, dangling, and it was really annoying me. Don't understand. So, you know, hope to see him back on the mound, obviously. And, you know, happy to use his tragedy to put my life into perspective like any good monster would. So, yeah, hope he gets better.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying about my ankle, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. It was a related thought, but, yeah.
All right. I feel great.
No problem. We're all great. We're all happy to be here. And we're happy to have you here. So we have a potentially great show for you. I think it's an interesting topic.
It's at least as interesting as most of the things we talk about.
We're going to talk for a little bit about, well, about us. I know what you're thinking. and then we're gonna pivot and kind of ask what I think is a pretty interesting question. And I'll ask it now just to get everybody's brains percolating. What is the kind of thing that you would like to see in a simulated baseball game? And you know, I think we all kind of have some ideas. We'll go around and figure that out, and we'd love to hear from you as well. So if you have any thoughts about that, or you know, are inspired by this, drop us a line. You can reach us at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. And you know, if anything is interesting, we'll read it on the next show. If it's not interesting, we'll probably read it on the next show too. Our standards are very low. That's why we're here. And I also have actually
we don't mind listening to ourselves every single time.
I actually have one quick note, by the way. One of our faithful listeners, who I have not bought, Noel or Noel, you should let me know. Dropped me a line to let me know that a friend of his is the holder of the library of Doug Pappas's books, and a former Baseball Prospectus writer, and somebody who was, you know, incredibly influential to me as a baby nerd on the internet on Rec Sports Baseball 1,000 years ago. Unfortunately, if you don't know, he passed away about a decade ago, but is responsible for.
Wow.
You know,
it's been a decade now?
I believe, or more.
Yeah,
but
just old.
You know, responsible for probably a lot of the ways we think about value. And
he did a lot of good work on the team level evaluations of spending, I think, and like bang for the buck, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you could see the principles of wins above replacement and the way we think about baseball in his work, for sure. And so his library, unfortunately, cannot move with this person. So because I live in a shoebox in New York City, there's nothing I could do. But I would love to give somebody who is a baseball fan or interested in great books an opportunity. To you know, take a look at this collection, and if anyone is interested in a lot of baseball books that I mean, the ones I know of seem, you know, vital, and it's about 20 boxes worth.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's a really impressive collection. You know, drop us a line, scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com, and we'll try to set you up. If getting a lot of baseball books sounds like something that would really appeal to you, I'm sure I would personally love to find a way to make sure it has a good home. So, that's my pitch. All right. Well... enough talking about good deeds. Let's start navel gazing again. So we were thinking, and you know, because things have been a little quiet on the mailbag captain front. Not that we're complaining, but again, scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. We'll read it.
Unless it's a trade offer, then we might not.
Yeah, that's true. But we're going to this time. So.
I was going to talk about Patrick Corbin. One guy asked about Patrick Corbin. I just noticed that.
Sure. happy to do it.
You can vamp on Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, well, what do I think of Patrick Corbin? He is a...
pitcher.
Yeah, he's a pitcher and has therefore been somewhat volatile. I was expecting a little more this year, to be honest. I was expecting him to take a step forward, and he just hasn't. And, you know, it's going to be a situation where he will be probably a borderline keeper in a 13. The league we were in where we moved him, which is what we're about to talk about, or we offered to move him, is not a league where I think we could keep him the next year. You know, and
we kept him this year.
Yeah, well, you see this with a lot of pitchers, you know. Certainly, I'm trying to think of, like, not even injured, like Sonny Gray. Is Sonny Gray going to be keepable next year? I don't know. It's a little tricky. Is Marcus Stroman going to be keepable next year? I think it's likely, but, you know, he really has taken a big step back, and it just happens with 25-year-old pitchers in a way that doesn't really happen as often with 25-year-old hitters. And I think with pitchers, I tend to be very sensitive to fluctuation. So, you know, I was into Corbin to begin the year, but, you know, these things happen, and I'm probably out for a while. Unless he finds another pitch or, you know, goes to whatever Matt Shoemaker pixie dust factory or the Rich Hill Clinic for rejuvenation. sorry. So what I was saying before, we were so rudely interrupted by an actual question from an actual listener, is that we had a pretty active couple of weeks on the trade front. And, you know, I want to talk about that just because it's something we know well ourselves. And, you know, we have a range of teams this year. And I'm saying a range of teams to kind of protect ourselves because the range is from, like, five bad ones to one good one. But we're really beginning to look at trade season and trying to get an understanding of what is... what the universe is at or looks like for teams that are non-contenders, what the universe looks like for a team that's going for it. And we've been on both sides of that recently. So, Ben, you've been doing most of the point person action.
Yeah. Go ahead, finish your question. That wasn't the joke.
That was not a joke. That was a serious point. How has it felt? You know, trying to drum up trades. Does it feel early? Do you feel like you're getting good value? Just in a general sense, what does it feel like right now? And has it varied by league, or do you think you're able to get something done?
You know how when you, like, first meet someone and you, like, go on that date and, like, you're sort of into them and they say that they're into you and then, like, you want to wait, like, the right amount of time before you reach out? It's like mm-hmm. If I thought about it that way and then I lost my phone and I did a terrible job of getting back to them and then felt like I was bothering them once I found my phone and was able to, like, find their phone number. Or maybe you're, like, bothering someone because they asked you to or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Trade stuff is fine. I was laughing when you first introed it because I'm really just sending the emails that you ask me to send. And I have some sense of what we want to do for all the teams because I can infer that for myself by looking at the teams, like, standings and stuff, but I think you're being a little bit too modest in introducing the approach that we take, because for the most part it's like, Ian, what's the plan? And you're like, the plan is sell these guys for at least this value. And then I'm like, okay. And then I just say, hey, so and so, you want this guy for that value? And he says no. And then, like, I go to the next guy and, like, hey, such and such, you want this guy for that value? And then he's like, I won't give you that value, but I'll give you a little bit less. I'm like, okay, great, sold. But so basically I'm just like the auctioneer, and you're the guy that owns the car and is like, this car is worth 200,000, but I'll sell it for 180. And I'm just trying to get you as close to 200,000 as possible.
Yeah, but I hate auctioning cars, so so I'm really glad that we have somebody else to do that. Because otherwise I'd go, 180, 175, 150, you want a car? Great, here's my car. Which is not ideal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. so...
I would say, one other thing. I would say that I am happy with the number of deals that we were able to get done. I think we talk a lot on the podcast, or at least I do, about wanting to take action around this time of year. And it's, of course, so much easier to say, like, make trades than it is to, like, actually go out and make trades. And I think for the most part, it's worth having this as a topic on the podcast, at least in part because of how many trades we were able to make across the, like, six different teams that we have.
Yeah, so were there any negotiations that stood out for you, or deals?
No, I think all of them were pleasant. I felt bad because I was late getting back to a couple of people, hence the awkward lost phone intro joke. Everyone was great to deal with that. I mean, we made enough trades that they all sort of run together, and it feels like one cordial interchange where we just gave up a bunch of players and got a bunch of draft picks.
Which kind of speaks to the quality of our teams this year. in general, if anyone ever thought we were some kind of worthwhile score sheet experts, well, we might be at 500 on the season, but that's...
It's because the one team that's good is really freaking good. And that's the one that you don't let me get anywhere near, I should add. The reason it's good this year is because last year I had a hand in the strategy, and the takeaway after last year's debacle was, don't let Ben have anything to do with the strategy. And then this year the strategy was, let Ian do everything, and now the team's on pace for a record number of wins.
Only 116, but who's counting? Definitely not me every week as the results come in.
We've had small sample size, Ben.
Many 6-0 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's a strong league, and I'm shocked that we're doing that well. And that's actually not the one that we've traded. So we've been, as Ben alluded to, we've been trading out a lot of players. So do you have a sense, like, my sense, and I have no idea whether this is accurate or not. I feel like in the 10 years that we've been doing this, like the return value for sellers has gotten a little lower. Is that fair, or am I just insane? Because I feel like the value of prospects has risen in particular.
Yeah.
And like future value.
I would agree that the value of prospects has risen. And I think I hadn't thought about whether your ability to get return on... See, I mean, I would say that the most common thing that somebody in our situation is trading is probably their bullpen, right? Because bullpen is almost always a one-year value, and once you're selling, it's like, fuck if I care, I don't need any bullpen. So we have on several occasions ridden all of the end of the summer with zero relievers on a roster because we actually did a good job drafting relievers, and then we traded all of them. And I guess I don't have a good sense for whether the overall market for relievers has gone up or down. I think it'll be interesting to look through like archives of trades or something like that to see if we had any information on that. But I do agree about the prospects though.
Yeah. I think it has become over time, and you probably noticed this in all of your leagues, just probably more difficult to pull prospects out. Maybe it's that we're playing in different leagues, but I think even in our scrapes through baseball, we've kind of noticed this, that, you know, teams have tended to hoard more prospects. And I think it's probably particularly noticeable because prospects are down at the moment. 23-year-old superstars in Major League Baseball are up significantly. But so I'm not I'm not saying that that's...
All-time high?
Yeah, so I'm not saying that it's... But there's probably a trough. Like, this Futures game, the best prospect in the Futures game is probably Andrew Benintendi, which is good, but it's not like... He's not going to be Bryce Harper. So, you know, I think with current prospects being down a bit, with prospects getting a little more difficult to move, I feel like we've tried to exercise a little bit more creativity. One trade that comes to mind that I thought was interesting, and I really am not convinced that we won this one, but I think for... Huh? Yeah, for our team needs, I think it was interesting. So we're in a league where this is our AL Duke shirt, if you want to follow along. Our team is not great, but...
this is a league we joined because the team looked like a compelling challenge and Gary's in the league, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we're getting closer to being an interesting team. And, you know, I think we're going to probably want to take stock at the end of the season and figure out if we can turn on the Jets and become a real team. But right now we're not. And one of the things that our team did have was Victor Martinez. And there is not a whole lot that a rebuilding team needs to do with a 36-year-old. Even if he's hitting the way Victor Martinez is. But what we had noticed when we tried to shop Victor Martinez around the league... is that one, we didn't have a lot of places to put Victor Martinez, frankly, because there weren't a lot of teams that were both contending and in need of just, you know, a bat with no
really,
positional bat.
Yeah, really just a bat.
And of the teams that did, I think we weren't getting the kind of player back that would move the needle. To the point where, you know, we have to come up with 13 keepers for next year. And it was, like, plausible that we would just keep Victor Martinez. That didn't seem like the right approach. So, you know, we identified a fellow owner as a good trade candidate, someone who values prospects the way we do. And someone who is also going for it and had kind of a stack of players who we'd be interested in. We've been collecting prospects for a long time, and this is one of the things that we were talking about. So we have, our team had 5 shortstop prospects of at least some value. Jorge Mateo, Franklin Barreto, Alex Bregman, Willy Adames, Javier Guerra, he's the reliever. With that, we tried to say, okay, so we're not going to get anything for Victor Martinez that will really move the needle, but what if we included one of those guys? What if we moved Jorge Mateo because I'm less worried because Willy Adames is there. I'm less worried because Alex Bregman is going to be a really good player. And then... maybe this way we can get A.J. Reed. And that's the trade that we ended up doing. It was Martinez plus Jorge Mateo for A.J. Reed. It's an interesting trade for us because I don't know that A.J. Reed is a better prospect than Jorge Mateo. and I think we may have lost it, you know, with single-year value, and we may have lost it in future years. But A.J. Reed, as mentioned at the beginning of the year, is one of the few... hitting prospects who's bad, I just feel really comfortable in. Like, I think he'll hit. I think he'll be an average player. I think in this league, which is a hard 13 league, there's a little more value to having a reliable bat than there is in a soft keeper league, which is the type of league that we usually play in.
Did Jerry have a hit yet?
I don't know. I'm not one to look at, like, results. It's about the process.
Yeah, Jared, you don't want to do results-oriented analysis. Come on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You should know better.
Yeah, you got to trust the process, okay? But yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't care if AJ Reed has a hit this year, and Thad did, but we weren't. I also didn't think that Victor Martinez was enough on his own. We got a question a couple weeks ago, like, what do you do if you have too many prospects and you're still trying to sell off? And this is the kind of thing you can do. You can get a little creative where you give somebody who likes prospects a good prospect, maybe even a better prospect, and just get the player that better fills your needs now.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that sort of goes along with that that you said implicitly is it's okay to lose trades. And sometimes it's even okay to make a trade with some hesitation that you might lose the trade if you think that either the upside of possibly winning the trade is tremendous or, like you said, in this case, the fit was just better for us. So AJ Reed probably doesn't even have to be that much better of a prospect at all than Mateo, as long as we can actually play Reed in a way that helps the team. And Mateo would have had to be like top two out of the five shortstops we had in order for him to play for us. And we're sort of hedging that, you know, there's some chance that won't happen, basically.
Right.
And because AJ Reed is already the best first base prospect that we have, right? First base?
Yeah, he's the best first base prospect in baseball right
now. Look at me knowing stuff.
Yeah, look at that.
It's like I follow baseball.
Ah, oh, so good. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's. I would say many of our trades were a little bit more pragmatic than that. It's just us moving relievers for picks and figuring out which pick to do. We're in a league where we do a lot of pick swapping instead of selling for picks, which is just kind of an interesting quirk of the league. I think there are some rules around having the same amount of picks to begin the draft.
That we may you certainly can't have a surplus of picks. Yeah. You will be legislated against for that.
Yeah. So it kind of changes the rules of that league a little bit, but you know, I don't know if anything is as compelling as that, but I think we ended up getting some mid-tier value. It's hard to sell into that first round, second round of the draft value with anybody who you'd want to give away. But you know, other than that, just, you know, keep looking. Look for players who are out for the year. start calling Clayton Kershaw's owner. Like, oh, maybe you won't have him in September. I don't know. So, you know, the best way to tell if a player is going to get injured in the future is if they've been injured in the past. And see how that works.
That reminds me of one trade offer we got from Nando, where he was asking if we would trade Byron Buxton. And we sort of looked to see, and we're like, no, there's not really anybody on his roster that we want for Byron Buxton. And he sent us a trade offer where he's like, if you add Buxton, I'll add, like, two of these three, like, injured pitchers or, like, injury-prone pitchers.
Yeah.
Like Matt Moore, Francisco Liriano, and somebody else I don't remember. Hinjin Ryu,
yeah. Maybe.
I forget who it was, but, like, it's one thing to go after very good players that are going to be valuable next year. It's like sort of something else to offer somebody that's at a local maximum of their value and ask them to pay at that value level.
Yeah, with the caveat that Byron Buxton is looking about injured pitcher level right
now.
but you know, he's 22, so I got time.
Yeah.
not too worried yet.
At what point does pot odds turn into sunk cost? Like, if you have enough money invested,
they're different things.
I know. All right, never mind.
Okay, such an economist. All right.
Sorry.
I know that they're.
Go back to your corner.
Can't I conflate two fallacies together? Or one non-fallacy with another fallacy.
I guess. I mean, I see what you're saying, I think, kind of.
The joke is, we've held on to him for this long, we can just keep holding on to him in hopes that he'll turn into something good. But that's not actually how you should look at it. You should look at it as, like, is he going to be worth keeping next year, regardless of how many times you've kept him in the past?
Yeah. And my instinct is to say yes, but give me another year. All right. Anything else? Have we exhausted that topic?
I hope so.
Okay.
Yes, I think so.
I feel like you're, like, actively doing taxes right now.
I'm not doing taxes. I'm looking at an East Bay catalog. It's totally different.
Well, we rely on radical honesty on this podcast. So.
Yeah, I'm shopping for cleats. I need new cleats. I might buy these Under Armour ones with tremendous ankle support since I busted my...
Yeah.
All right.
Just kidding.
I guess this is essentially ad space. So, yeah. East Bay, hit us up. use our promo code.
Hey, we don't have a promo code.
You get 20%. I mean, is there a coupon in the catalog?
hang on, let me see.
Ben's going to use it, though.
Okay.
I actually got a coupon from Warrior because the last cleats that I ordered did not ship for 10 days after I ordered them, which is, like, that's unheard of in this day and age of, like, online shopping. And I called to ask them, like, hey, where the heck are my cleats? And they're like, so sorry, 25% off next order. It's like, all right, fine.
All right, so that's right, 25% off your next order. Back now. We use that product. We don't mention any product that we don't endorse personally. So that's how you can tell. They're being honest. All right. So one product we all use and endorse is Score Sheet. But we were kind of thinking, or I wouldn't say today, we've been kind of thinking for a decade, off and on all the time about, so if Score Sheet didn't exist, or, you know, if Score Sheet was being founded today, you know, what would be some of the kinds of things that you would be looking for in a game, or in this game, or in a game? And, you know, leaving it outside the realm of Score Sheet for a second, just what compels you about this kind of fantasy baseball in general, or I guess any sort of simulation? And what would you look for in a product?
So I don't know how you want to format this. But I'll start because I have one thing that I think is the thing that I hear everybody say when we talk about this and that we have, like, talked about enough times that logistically we just haven't figured out a good way for it to work. But that's the ability to have pinpoint control over managerial changes in-game. And I think logistically and scheduling-wise it's just kind of... headache, and it requires such an increased time commitment on behalf of owner/managers that it's kind of hard to set up. But I think it would be really fun to be able to always know exactly when you're going to take a certain pitcher out or substitute a defensive replacement or pinch hit or whatever. And I think the ability to do that in a way that accommodates people that want to just set it and forget it, and people that want to have sort of micromanaging control over every game and to play every game down to that level of detail, I think would be really cool.
Yeah, and that's sort of a holy grail, isn't it? I would agree. I feel like... So, you know, if I were to... go out to 32,000 feet. So what do I enjoy most about the, you know, simulation baseball or simulated general managing? It's the ability to have, you know, sort of granular control over the world around you, to kind of build your own world, as it were, and you know, develop a team in your image, such as it is. Whether it's,
or maybe a better, more attractive image,
or one of your five teams on a 71K. You know, either way, who's to say? But you know, I do think in 2016, like, it would be an interesting challenge to figure out how to crack the idea of marrying two great things, marrying the idea of Strat-O-Matic, or, you know, out of the park baseball, I guess, the ability to play multiplayer, you know, a game, but using sort of real stats, using generated stats the way Scoresheet has them. And I think, you know, the idea of the fantasy project, product, having the ability to have a team that kind of generates value in real time. And, you know, I don't know that, well, I do know that we don't have an answer to that. You know, I don't know that the answer is out there, but, you know, in this kind of fantasy segment, to me, that seems like the nut that I would most like to see cracked.
Yeah. I wonder if part of the solution rests in having some type of regular schedule for the games, and instead of doing the games in a certain batch, like a week at a time, having the games go... So the problem with doing games a week at a time is you want there to be as much realism as possible between the performance that happens that day the real-life performance that happens that day for all of the players, impacting their performance in the simulation, and have the simulation game happen shortly enough after the real-life performance that you are not going to know what happens when you make that defensive substitution, or that you're not going to know exactly what's going to happen when you put that reliever in, so right. That there is some amount of uncertainty in, like, I don't know what's going to happen if my closer is going to blow this save or not. Or, you know, I don't know exactly the right time to pull my starter because I don't know exactly how many runs he's going to give up. And I wonder if part of the solution to that is, instead of doing it in batch, you do some type of rolling thing where there's some, like, weighted average of recent results having more to do with how the performance happens today, but having enough pseudo-randomness baked into it that when I play the games for today, it's going to be based heavily on recent results, but not exclusively on recent results. And then you don't have a set time window that you could study to see, like, how somebody's going to do in the games that you're playing. And the major downside then is you have to have some sort of, like, regular cadence of games so that you have that rolling window available.
Yes, and I do want to expand on that, because I think when you said, like, you don't know, that really hammers on something for me, which is, has always been the thing that has kept, say, Strat-O-Matic Baseball or Diamond Mind at a distance from me, that the way it uses a replay of the previous year's stats, the prior year's stats, like, you don't, so in the moment where you're running a strat team, you don't know, right? But you know what the card is, and I feel like knowing what the card is in its own way a little bit of a frustration.
Well, it just
abstraction.
Is a different, it's a different sort of problem. And I think what we like is that uncertainty of not knowing what to expect from the player and having, like, not randomness necessarily, but that uncertainty and that sort of, like, stochastic element involved, I think, is part of what makes it fun. That's why rotisserie fantasy baseball starts to seem boring after a while, because it's so deterministic and sort of, like, I don't know, there's just a one-to-one relationship. And obviously it also lacks other elements that a good simulation would have, but...
Yeah, well, the uncertainty and, I would say, the responsiveness to the real world. And, like, it's so interesting, because the balance is between, like, you know, reflecting the world as it exists, and then creating your own world. So, you know, I don't want to pivot too much from this, but I kind of have a related point. Jared, I want to make sure you feel like you have the ability to jump in.
Thank you. I do feel like that I have the ability to jump in. And I got some other stuff that when you guys are done that I'll bring up too. But I guess, Ben, maybe if... Because I don't disagree with you, but if you could go into a little bit more about the randomness or stochasticity, just because... Because, again, I agree with you, but in a game like Strat or Diamond Mine or whatever, like when you have where you have a card, there's still the randomness where you're like rolling a die. Mm-hmm. And you know exactly what the 20 outcomes, but our outcomes are going to be. But there's some randomness, you know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I could see someone making the argument that it's the same way now where, yeah, in a given week, you don't know what any player is going to do. But if your player is Mike Trout or whatever the player is, you have, based on his past performance, you have a pretty decent idea of what to expect.
Yeah, I think it's the point. Well, I don't know if this is what Ian was saying, but you want it weighted heavily enough towards recent performance that you have some sense that the fantasy and simulation performance is cued by or more directly dependent on real life performance in a time recency way. So that if a guy has an awesome week, then he's going to be more likely to have an awesome week for your fantasy team, which, you know, does not exist in the randomness that, like, Strat has, because it's sort of
right, you
uniform.
Know how...
It's a uniform distribution across trials. It's not that, like, the distribution sort of actually changes on an ongoing basis.
When you get Mike Trout's card in the Strat League, you know what his results are going to be at the end of the season. And you don't know that when you draft him in score sheet.
Right. And on any given week, you also don't know if it's going to be a good week or a bad week. And I think part of the enjoyment is riding the roller coaster of good weeks and bad weeks along with your players to say, Jake Arrieta got a no-hitter in real life, and now he just got a no-hitter for my fantasy team. You know.
So I hear that, but in Strat, their players will have good weeks and bad weeks, right? And you don't know exactly what they're going to have in the season. You probably have a better idea than in something like Scoresheet, but it's still not going to be exactly what's on the card.
Dependent on how that player's week goes in real life, though?
No, I agree. I think that's the big difference, but in terms of the randomness, I think there is still that randomness present.
Yeah, but it feels less like randomness when it's based on a reality result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a different sort of randomness. You're dealing with the random, like the uncertainty of what his actual outcomes will be, not the uncertainty of what the dice roll will be.
I think.
And I think people would generally have more fun being fans of baseball than like watching dice's roll.
So it's really interesting because one thing this brought up for me, and if anyone has been following me on the Scoresheet Talk forums this year, you'll know that this is about to hit my personal bugbear.
I muted you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I muted myself too. The interesting thing is like. The question for me is, like, what's real and what's not? So I want to know if Mike Trout goes 2-for-5 with a home run, or Mike Trout goes 4-for-5 with 3 home runs, I want that to sort of be reflected in the day's games in one way or another, you know? I want to be able to feel that somehow. And if, let's say, you know, Adam Duvall is leading the league in home runs, I want Adam Duvall to be leading my fantasy league in home runs, ish. You know, with some variance. But I also want to be able to play Adam Duvall at catcher if I were willing to allow my, like, if I were willing to have the team allow 100 extra runs.
Are you then breaking that realism, though?
Yeah, so, well, that's an interesting question of what do I feel is real. I feel like performance is real, and I feel like position or whether a player is playing that day or not is just some arbitrary construct.
Wait, say that again? You think whether a player is playing that day or not is an arbitrary construct?
Yeah, unless they're injured. But if, you know, I would say if, you know, somebody sits Michael Conforto for the day, let's say,
like or
sends
lefties.
Him to AAA, yeah, or against everybody, or sends him to AAA, or, like, steadily shatters his confidence until he's replaced by what I believe to be a clownfish.
Joshi and Newsletter, everybody, $30 for a year, worth your time, worth your money.
The, you know, I want to be able to play Michael Conforto. I feel like I shouldn't be subject to Terry Collins' whims.
Yeah.
But I would like...
So what you're talking about is something that marries the, like, predetermined skill set rating of Stratomatic and gives you the ability to play Michael Conforto at that skill level if you so desire, regardless of whether his real-life manager does so or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been kind of kicking around an idea in my head, and I don't know how much to really... But the idea of, like, having what I would say is, like, a base level of performance, so something like a rest-of-season stat, like Coda rest-of-season or Steamer rest-of-season, and just... converting that somehow into player ratings. You know, I've been looking at the way that, let's say, Madden football rates somebody. I don't know that everybody knows this, but if you are familiar with the rating system for EA Sports, so, like, Ben Roethlisberger has a kicker rating.
Wait, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Everybody gets rated on everything, and there's, oh, man, there's a really fun, I'll send you guys. Yes, it's good.
Wait, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you can play Ben Roethlisberger as your kicker if you want?
Yeah, and the fact that you are smiling right now is exactly...
It's hilarious. Exactly, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Did you ever see Ethan Albright's letter to John Madden? It's awesome. It's hilarious. We can link or something.
We'll share the link. It's not the only system that does that. I know, Front Office Football does that, for example, and it's that's kind of an indie football game.
Is it fundamentally easier to do it for football then? Is that why, like, it happens?
No, I believe Out of the Park Baseball does it as well. I believe Out of the Park Baseball rates hitters with the pitcher criteria as well. You know, so I think... to my mind, there are things that are fundamental to a player. There are ratings that kind of are affected by their performance over time, but then also affected by their performance within the day or the week. You know, if the player goes 2 for 3,
you're taking a hybrid of the strat system where you have a set card at the beginning of the year, and then based on in-season performance, you're going to, like, bump that up and down?
Yeah, or some sort of very extremely volatile and sensitive modifier over a base stat.
And so how does it handle situations where the player's not playing? Either coach's decision or injury-wise, like, are they still available at that, like, base level?
I would say yes, with a significant negative modifier, because going 0-for-0 with no performance probably means you won't be doing that well that day.
Okay.
But to me, for instance, one of the things that I struggle with score sheet is the player AAA. To me, that's an abstraction. And no real team would do that. Yeah.
But I think the reason it exists in score sheet is for simplicity's sake. And
does anything about this conversation sound like simplicity's sake matters?
No. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, so... and, like, so I'm the one that suggested this topic, and there's, like, a bunch of aspects of this that I want to get into that we haven't even started to touch on. So I don't want to spend the whole time talking about, you know, like...
Oh, we can make this a two-part podcast.
just what the listeners are clamoring for. Let's talk about fantasy baseball.
I think they find it interesting.
Well, we can see. You can write and let us know if this is interesting or not. And Hopefully the majority of feedback aligns with whether we end up doing two parts or not. So I think the major thing that we're talking about right now is, what is the driver of performance within the simulation in terms of player-specific odds, essentially? Like, what are the chances that they do each of the different outcomes, right? Like, what are the chances that Michael Conforto hits a home run in this next plate appearance? And mm-hmm. how do you set that to start, and how does it change over time? And I think there's other technical discussions about whether we're comfortable with generally like an odds ratio approach to what if Michael Conforto is facing, I'm going to pick two pitchers that I hope are still ambulatory, Kyle Loesch or John Lackey or Jake Arrieta or something like that, Clayton Kershaw, whoever. You know, how does the expected distribution of outcomes for that plate appearance change based on the pitchers, I think is like mm-hmm. one thing we could talk about. Because I think, Ian, I've heard you talk a little bit about platoon differences and like what...
Yeah.
How realistic platoon differences need to be in the simulation for it to be enjoyable.
That sounds like me.
and I think you also should consider the possibility that a pitcher's recent performance is more or less important than the hitter's recent performance in how their various attributes impact the expected odds for the outcomes of that plate appearance. So we've been talking all about Michael Conforto because that's the example that you gave, but do you think all of the rules are the same for a starting pitcher or like a reliever as they are for a position player? Because I'm not sure that they are.
I may push this back on you, but why would they not be?
I think it comes down to how you want to measure the sample sizes for their relative performance. But to me, it feels like when you're dealing with relievers, you've got multiple samples of very small sizes that are all like spread out across different situations. And sometimes the situations are similar because it's like a closer and he comes in the same like clean frame every time. But a starter, the batters that they face are going to be obviously in larger samples of batters faced per sample and in fewer samples. So just like by virtue of the way that some of that randomness works, they might have different sampling distributions. But then I think also the fact that the starting pitcher is going through a wider variety of scenarios within each of the samples as opposed to across the samples, and that the batter is always coming up on a very regular interval, mean that the way that we measure their performance and the way that you think about how you would simulate what happens when they face each other could be different. I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm just saying, like, when I think about it, it seems to me like you have to recognize that what you're trying to have, you want the simulation to be realistic. So you want it to be some reflection of true talent in the players, and also some amount of variation that makes it dramatic and compelling and uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's really going to be that excited if their Miguel Cabrera fantasy player hits 20 fewer home runs for their fantasy team than he does in real life. And I think we're going to struggle...
What? Yeah, in real life, meaning for that season. Yes, I agree.
Right, so if Miguel Cabrera, Detroit Tigers, hits 30 home runs, and Miguel Cabrera on Team 3 True Outcomes hits 10 home runs at the end of the season, we're going to be like, hey, where the F are my 20 home runs? And I think most people will say that louder than we would. And so there's like this very delicate balancing act between perceived uncertainty and lack of actual uncertainty, if that makes any sense. Mm. Because you really want the end of season results for your score sheet team to look a lot like your end of season results for the regular player, right? And we talked before about when we're doing analysis for our score sheet teams, how you can sort of compare those two, because we know that score sheet has this like balancing sort of algorithm in the background that helps make sure that at the end of the season they look as similar as possible. And I think that's a great idea by the Bartons, because I think that's what people really want out of their simulation. And we might be unique in that we don't want that, but sort of to tie this back to the sequencing then, my sense is that you have a different way of controlling how the sequencing adheres or does not adhere to reality to make sure that by the end of the season, things look hunky-dory in the eyes of John Q simulation team runner when they compare real-life stats to fantasy stats. And I think it's because of the way that you're going to see basically like iterations of a perceived dice roll happening for the batters versus the starting pitchers versus the relievers.
Does that make any sense? I agree. And then do you have to factor in how many teams are in the fantasy league and like level of competition versus real? Kind of like if you're in a super deep league, would you expect the player to work, you know, like that sort of thing?
Yeah, you're talking about differences in replacement level there, right?
Yep. But that's a reason why the overall stats would look different.
Yes. Do you think people want to buy into that?
I don't know.
Or are you saying
like people? Do you want to buy into
that? Yes. Personally, yes, of course.
Okay.
So
you won't care if your fantasy Miguel Cabrera hits 20 fewer home runs as long as you can tell it's because the scoring environment in your fantasy league was much lower because every team was allowed to retain three crossover pitchers or some silliness like that.
100%. As long as the results seem to be informed by real life. I'm not interested in whether they're accurate. I feel like, you know, one of the things, not to take this too far into actual score sheet, but like the ERA balancing, I feel like, is very limiting. For instance, that it causes some strange externalities with score sheet. Because as we've discovered over time, you know, I think ERA is not necessarily the best way to measure pitching value. And so, you know, if you're not balancing that, you could certainly be balancing another thing. You could be balancing, you know, fielding independent pitching. You could probably at this point in 2016 start balancing, like, pitch FX results. But
yeah, I mean, I think so those sorts of details I'm interested in also, right? Because when you're talking about measuring pitcher performance in a way that helps you inform how the plate appearance with Michael Conforto is going to turn out, I'm interested in talking about what details you're going to use. Are you going to use pitch effects? Are you going to use just box score level stuff? Do you think the pitch effects level things are too nuanced in like a general sense? Because, and I guess maybe too, maybe it's important to take a step back. I'm thinking about this in terms of what does the ideal simulation look like for everybody as a whole, not for like me as my like personal little kingdom. And so what I'm trying to think of and keep in mind are what's going to happen when Lar Michaels wants to play a simulation game. Is he going to like this attribute or not? You know?
I only know myself.
Okay.
I think you have to be a little careful because you're not going to please absolutely everybody all the time, right?
Yeah.
So I think you'd have to make hard decisions at some point. And yeah, I mean, I get you want to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah. So, and maybe part of the wrinkle that we have at the moment is just that it's such a sweeping and open-ended question that we didn't have enough structure when we set out to try to answer it. Because, and so, you know, when I suggested the topic, I was thinking about all manner of things. And that's why I sort of talked first about, like, managerial control. But then, you know, we also got into how do you figure how much recency has to do with determining what we'll say, like, skill level for the purposes of the simulation outcome. I think that's also, I mean, we could do an hour on that alone, probably. Mm-hmm. And then that doesn't even get into what does it look like? Does it matter if you get, like, MS-DOS style prompt readouts of game action? Does it matter if you have really attractive box score results for the games? Does it matter if you have fancy sortable statistics leaderboards for your simulated league and the stats for all of the players? Or is all of that sort of tertiary enough that it doesn't really matter if the way that the games are played is something that everybody likes?
Well, and then that's sort of a separate question, because that's all stuff that can be done by any system, right, if you put the time and resources into it. I don't know if any of that is integral to the game itself, maybe in terms of popularity, but in terms of how the game functions as an essential being.
Okay.
That's I do think they're interesting questions and worth talking about.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. They're not necessarily directly relevant to the topic that we set out to answer.
Right now. At least how I
viewed it. Yeah. Ian, I felt like I cut you off maybe when you were halfway into talking about wanting to have some sort of baseline performance that gets moderated up and down.
Oh, that's okay. Because I was just reading Ethan Arbright's letter. It's pretty good. You guys should read it. Google that. Yeah, well, right. So there are a number of different directions you can spin this. I think you can spin it into in-game play. You can spin it into outside gameplay. I kind of am on the side of interesting general manager decisions. So, again, just speaking for me, like, if the prompt is, what do you want to see in a simulation? I feel like I like a reality, or I like a world that I feel like I can control and have impact in, but that is kind of out of my hands. It's what I like the most in everything, really. I kind of, it's why I tend to like improv comedy. You know, I like being able to create a world and then just have a lot of stuff be out of my hands. It's spontaneous. And right for that, so there are things that I would enjoy having control over that I feel like people might see as unrealistic. Like, if I want to play Kyle Schwarber at catcher every day, I should be able to do that. Like, that's, to me, that's something that, you know, is I think any simulation worth its salt has some sort of measurement of defense. Like, we could, again, have a conversation about what that would look like, but a simulation that measures defense. And then you could say, okay, well, we know approximately how good he'd be as a defender, and we know approximately how good he's been this season, and those sorts of factors go into it and, you know, measured against the other team as the third factor.
Let me ask you a question about that specific instance, because I agree with what you're saying, but I think there is also a factor that we're not considering, and that's the toll of being a catcher for a full season, I think, is something that is not baked into Kyle Schwarber's defensive whatever right now. We could, you know...
You think there should be artificial fatigue?
Well, I mean, I hesitate to use artificial, but kind of, right? I think that's one problem with being able to play Kyle Schwarber for, say, 162 games.
Yeah.
You'd have, like, in real life, in any sort of approximate, I think I'd want to be able to say, yeah, you can do that, but, like, he's going to get busted up, or he's going to start playing really crappy defense or something. It seems like there should be some sort of penalty.
I mean, out-of-the-park baseball has done that for a decade. So, like, I have no problem with that. I feel incredibly comfortable with that. Right. Well, because one of the... And not to, like, relitigate this topic. But, you know, that... I was just thinking at the end of this, like... So the conversation is like, okay, so Kyle Schwarber... you know, this was a firestorm that Kyle Schwarber played two games in the outfield and was hurt and was out for the season. And then everyone's like, well, he's not a catcher anymore. I'm like, but he's, like, he was like wearing a catcher's mask, and he's like has a sign that says I'm a catcher and like will catch for food. He's going to catcher's meetings. Somebody's got to tell him because he's pretty sure he's a catcher. And then you're like, well, is he like, can he catch? And then yes, of course he can.
We like saw. I could be a catcher if you really wanted me to.
Yes, you're a catcher. Yes, but right, but as long as you simulate it correctly and give you the correct defensive ratings, which would all be 80s on the 28 scale.
The defensive ratings might be okay. The offensive ratings would be really bad.
But the idea that like everyone would be okay if like Kyle Schwarber played 21 games at catcher and 140 in the outfield. I was like, oh yeah, that everyone would really be happy then. It's like, okay, so that's where the line is. Like, you know, if you're putting the line somewhere, then I feel like that question is wrong, because I don't think there's a line. I think the questions you're asking are the right ones, which are like, how do you measure it? How do you simulate it? And those are the sorts of things that, were I interested in simulation, I'd like to see. I feel like Scoresheet does a very good job especially offensively, where I want to say, but you know, in terms of defense, I like having the idea of control. I like to be able to think about doing things like, well, maybe I should play Andrelton Simmons at set, or play my shortstop at second base because I have Andrelton Simmons, and we think he could cross over, and there would be a little penalty because, you know, he's playing out of position. There would probably be a higher error rating, but I would know what that is, or I'd have a sense of that, and I would deal with it. And with Kyle Schwarber catcher, you would say, okay, these are standard things that happen when you play players out of position at catcher. Or
that makes sense. I think to Ben's points, this starts to get super complicated, and a user would have to have a lot of faith in the system, and it's hard to check that everything's working because there's so much going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I had two thoughts as you guys were going through this.
I don't have to operationalize any of this.
Yeah. So I had two thoughts as you guys were going through all of this. The first thought that I had was, and this sort of gets back to just like a high level organizationally, like the discussion itself. And I was thinking, what if instead of trying to go through all of the things that could possibly be relevant, and obviously doing like 10 separate podcasts on that for whatever reason, what if we just tried to come up with the most important tenets to us of what the ideal baseball simulation looks like? So it could be like the most important tenet is, we don't know ahead of time what the outcome of any given plate appearance is going to look like. Like, maybe that's the thing that we think is the most important. Like, that's what makes it, by its very nature, a simulation. And then maybe the second tenet is something like, recent real-life performance has a significant factor in what the simulated results look like, or something like that. So that simulation results closely reflect recent real life performance. And then maybe the third one is, every player is rated at every skill so that any player can be used in any role at the simulation manager's discretion, regardless of real life utilization. And we just sort of go through it like that and try to come up with a rank-ordered list of all of the things that we think would most accurately describe what is, at least like in our collective minds, and again, like listeners, if you have thoughts, the reason we're doing this on the podcast is because we're interested in your thoughts, because we could have this conversation on our own if we really wanted to.
And
we have maybe a few times before. But I think, you know, the audience here is a group of people that are all interested in this same topic. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing with your spare time, and you wouldn't be listening to us talk about doing the same thing with our spare time.
And occasionally Silicon Valley.
Sure. And other random pop culture stuff.
Our ankles.
So that was my first idea, was basically like, what if we just frame this in terms of a rank-ordered list of tenets of like the things that the things that are most important to us in defining what this looks like. And now I've been talking about that for so long, I don't even remember what the second thing was. You guys were talking about...
That's all right. It sounds like you gave us homework for the next podcast. Come up with... All of us, listeners, come up with some tenets. All right.
We can do that.
Yeah.
Anything else on this topic, or I feel like that's a great cliffhanger.
Okay, we can hang it there.
Really exciting, a two-parter. Whoa,
a multi-parter anyway.
Yeah. I don't want to promise this ends because I think there's still a lot of stuff we haven't talked.
It could
about.
Be like an ongoing aside. I could do like a tenet a week or something, or you know, every episode.
That's kind of interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but very interested in what our listeners have to say if we haven't, you know, shocked all of them into boredom.
They should be used to that by now.
Yeah, in for a penny. All right. On that note, anything else or anything else you want to add to this discussion?
I wish I could remember what the second thing was I was going to say. You guys were talking about fatigue and defensive stuff. I don't remember. All right, never mind. If I think of it, I'll say something.
All right.
I should probably go first for best things, because the thing I saw was not exactly a thing I saw, and it's...
I don't know if any of us says something good. It's been a boring week, guys.
Yeah. We're so bad at this.
did we podcast since the Cavaliers won the NBA Finals?
I don't know. I was thinking about that.
I don't, 'cause like that was pretty incredible, yeah. Just from like that, a normal sports news sort of.
I think that was after, yeah. You can count that if you want.
I mean, I don't know that it's the best thing any of us saw, but did you guys watch the speech that LeBron gave like at the parade?
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so he goes like player by player. It's more or less exactly what you would expect. And in that, it's usually fairly entertaining, sometimes like unintentionally funny, and sometimes the things that you'd expect him to say about some of his teammates are like damning with faint praise or something like that.
Did he suitably shade Kevin Love?
The Kevin Love one was pretty funny. He spent more time talking about how people said Kevin Love doesn't like him or something, or like isn't a good player, than he did talking about how good he was or something. Anyway, it was kind of entertaining, and above and beyond that, I think it's just an interesting spectacle to see, like, you know, the quote city of Cleveland double in population for this parade, because you've basically got like this region of Ohio that's losing their minds over this event. I thought it was interesting. That was not the best thing that I saw this week.
Can I jump in for a second, though?
Of course.
And go on a little rant?
Yeah.
Well, we got to have a little...
There's no rants on this podcast.
People of America, we have to have some real talk about the size of parades and population. Everyone is lying to you.
Oh, man.
1.3 million people did not show up at the Cavs parade. I'm sorry. That is an overestimate by a factor of 10. I don't like talking about my real life job, but believe me, I know this for a fact.
It you is sound like a crazy person, Ian. It is truth to never.
Is your hat made out of tinfoil, or
I'm a parade size truther. Because like we've had to measure the size of parades before, because that's a thing that we do. It's not like the numbers that are estimated are never real, and like the entire country has just decided to join in on a convenient lie that parades are so much larger than they actually are, just because everyone is like, oh yeah, a parade has like about a million people show up, that's like a normal thing. No, do you know how many people a million people is? It would be like you would not see Cleveland anymore.
It does help if you put it in perspective, like a ballpark holds give or take 50,000 people. They're like,
yeah,
that's so many ballparks full of people.
And those are layered. And like, just imagine just like spreading all those people out, and some of them have like picnic blankets. It's not a real thing. They're one, like, I'm sorry, it's not like bigger than the city of Cleveland. It was nice. I'm sure a lot of people showed up. I'm sure a lot of people went to work. It's a nice like 200,000 person parade. It's a lot. Cleveland, you should be happy with yourself. It's great for Cleveland. But 1.3 million people did not show up. I'm not a crackpot.
I hope I didn't quote that number. I was just saying a lot of people showed up, and I think that is true.
That is true.
Yeah.
So wait, Ian, have we gone to the moon or not? Is that...
Yeah, moon's fine. Parades are fake.
I think there's also some room to talk about the basketball itself. Obviously, it's a baseball podcast, but it was... I don't know. Like, I'm not a huge NBA fan, but I was very entertained by Game 7. And
how great would it be if I was like, there were only four people on the court at any time?
That part was a ruse also.
Yeah. It might be true. No one knows that Kevin Love really exists. Sorry.
Kevin Love also spent the whole time like sort of awkwardly having two wrestling belts draped over his shoulders. Just like, I don't know. I guess in a world where J.R. Smith shows up with no shirt on everywhere he goes, Kevin Love having fake wrestling belts is not that big a deal.
Alright. Sorry. Yeah, the basketball was good. I like the game. It reminds me that basketball can be really exciting when it's played well.
Yeah. I'm sure Jared enjoyed how close the games were late.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, do you have an actual best thing?
I do. So this past week was the World Ultimate Guts Championships. Ultimate and Guts Championships. It's basically like the Olympics of Frisbee, I guess, if such a thing were like an actual thing, where like nations hold tryout processes to have the very best players in their nations vie to compete on the national team, and then all the national teams go to a tournament and play against each other. Sure. Except for that, like, it'd be like the World Cup if the World Cup also had men's and women's and old men That's and true. Old women's and a co-ed division all going on at the same time.
Okay.
And across those five divisions, the United States won all five gold medals, which was exciting. It's good, like, you get your nationalism in. They also had done a fundraiser to broadcast live stream a bunch of the games, which was cool. So, you know, Frisbee fans got to watch Ultimate Frisbee being played. And I had the happy fortune of getting to watch a bunch of the guys that are now in the old guys division that like helped teach me to play when I was first starting beyond that gold medal winning old men's team. They call it Masters, which was pretty cool. And it was fun. And of course it's like fun to see your friends do well and be excited. There's of course like a whole bunch of discussions in the Frisbee community about whether it was good or not for the international development of the sport to have Team USA win every single thing. They weren't like super dominant. Team Canada and Team Japan were pretty strong, I think, across the board. And Europe always has a couple of good teams also. I think it varies by the divisions for them a little bit more, but anyway, that was good. It was entertaining, and I think generally good for Ultimate Frisbee fans. And since that's what I always talk about, I figured I might as well.
Nice.
I will say, it does sound very exciting. Really hoping that the World Ultimate Guts Championship was going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, me too. And,
yeah, I wanted an aggro crag, I'm sorry to say.
So there's two different championships. One is Ultimate Frisbee and one is Guts. Do you guys know what Guts is?
No.
Does it involve an aggro crag?
No, but it involves guts. So, best that I can tell, you get three people and they stand like 10 yards apart from each other, maybe? I don't know what the actual distance is. I should know this. And they basically have like a maybe like a 10-foot wide line that they all stand on. So like in front of a soccer goal, maybe. Think of this, in front of a soccer goal. So there's like three people standing in front of a soccer goal, and there's two soccer goals. We'll say they're like 20 yards apart or something. I don't know what the actual distance is. And you take turns throwing a flying disc as hard as humanly possible at the other team, trying to get it into their soccer net. And you, of course, like score points if you can get it past them. But you also get points, I think, based on being able to catch. And I think you have to catch it one-handed no matter what.
Oh, man.
So there's, like, of course, like fancy gloves to keep you from breaking your hand. And it's... I don't know. It sounds like the Aggro Crag equivalent for flying discs to me.
It sounds like something the Scottish people would invent.
That, for whatever reason, that reminds me of Robin Williams's comedy sketch about the Scottish people inventing golf. Have you guys seen this?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
If you haven't seen this, podcast listeners, please right now go to YouTube and look up Robin Williams golf and come back in like 5 minutes or whatever. Make sure there's nothing in your mouth and you're sitting down because it's it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or don't come back because I got nothing. I
mean, yeah. you could talk about that link that I sent. I don't know if you saw this. That's gonna be my runner up. It's a list of 80 fun minor league baseball logos. I guess we could link to this in the podcast also.
I'm a little bit upset because not all of these are minor league baseball teams. So I'm feeling a little cheated. Not to see conspiracy theories and everything.
Yeah, there's a bunch of teams. Even there's like one that's just the New York Penn League logo. Like, what the hell is that? Anyway, some of them are funny. El Paso Chihuahuas? Like, come on.
That's pretty good.
That's solid. If anyone's interested, there was a good podcast I was listening to with a Brandios guy. Was that I forgot. Was that an Effectively Wild or was that somewhere else? Well, whatever. Search for Brandios. they're the teams that do. Oh no, it's a Hang Up and Listen. Go search Hang Up and Listen Brandios, and you'll see why all of these minor league logos are now extremely loud and incredibly animal-y.
The Akron Rubber Ducks.
Yes,
been there.
Yeah, the rubber ducks. By the way, I think we said this last time. The Rubber Ducks ran the best minor league operation that we've seen to date, I believe.
With one big exception. There's one big exception to that.
Yeah. Okay.
There's one huge strike about the Akron Rubber Ducks and how they operate.
Yeah, you want to field this one?
Ben, do you know what the Rubber Ducks do not sell in their gift shop?
Baseball hats.
Rubber Ducks. You can't buy a rubber duck at the Akron Rubber Ducks Stadium.
That does seem like an oversight.
Right?
Do you think the Savannah Bananas sell bananas at their concession stands?
We have the... Okay, so... We didn't talk about this last time.
Cedar Rapids Cardinals.
Cedar Rapids Cardinals had better sell some corn. I agree. We haven't been to Cedar Rapids yet.
But you have
a standing theory of minor league teams, okay. Right? If your minor league team is named after something, that product had better be front and center in your organization, especially if it's something comestible that can be sold and eaten at a ballpark.
Yeah.
If you're the Montgomery Biscuits,
oh, yeah.
You better have a pretty damn good biscuit.
Yeah.
And if you don't...
Yeah. They have like one stand with biscuits.
Yeah, Montgomery, you're on the
What about the Biloxi Shuckers?
I don't know. I would have an oyster at the game.
What about the Kansas City T-Bones? This is totally made up. What is this?
I don't know. That's some like
I'm calling shenanigans on this website.
Agreed. Yeah, that was my last rant. We're basically a bunch of lunatics. No, when we went to Dr. Pepper Ballpark and couldn't get any Dr. Pepper there, or any specialty Dr. Pepper.
Do you think the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs have, like, little crab, like, pet crabs running around, or, like...
It's probably eaten crabs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a goal of ours. All right. Since obviously we know where our interests lie. So I don't have much. I'll be very quick because I did nothing these last couple weeks. The best thing I saw this week was going to be the Coastal Carolina Arizona championship game.
Yeah.
But that got sold. That got rained out. We're recording this on a Thursday evening. I'm gonna know what happened. I have not seen what happened. It is on my TiVo, assuming I knew how to set that up correctly. So it sounds like it's the best thing I saw this week.
But you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
All right.
Barrier's low. So instead, I'll just go with the best thing I heard this week. If you have any interest in basketball at all beyond, or any interest in podcasts, Nate Duncan and his Dunked On podcast did a 4.5-hour off-season mock off-season special. I have listened to all 4.5 hours. Wow. It is a delight. I want to steal the format for us. I can't figure out how to do it yet. We might have to bring in some ringers just to represent some.
So wait, did he have mock GMs for everybody?
Yeah. So what it is? So he has
amazing.
He has three very smart people. Daniel Ruth, Feldman, and Kevin Pelton take about 10 teams each.
Kevin Pelton,
and then he Nate played the role of the player agent for each player, and they would go around and basically nominate players in order, and with just enough role playing. It's really terrific, and it helps that everyone in the podcast knows their stuff back to front. And it was like, just if you're into player roster management wonkery, and for God's sake, you're here, aren't you? And you want to spend 4.5 hours.
What's the name of the podcast again?
Dunked On Basketball.
Oh gosh. All right.
You can search Twitter for Nate Duncan NBA.
Okay.
And then once you listen to it, start figuring out how to do it for us, and who you want to invite to our trade deadline mock special.
Okay.
Because I'm really into that. And that's all I got. And because I want to go watch a Coastal Carolina Arizona game. So Jared, what's the best thing you saw this week?
Yeah, I don't really have that much.
You saw the major league debut of the number one prospect in
baseball. I was getting that. The actual best thing I saw was Messi's free kick against the U.S., but that's unpatriotic. You may be listening to this on July 4th, so I don't want to bring that up. But that was just the best.
Wow.
Like, you can't kick a ball any better than that. It was.
You talk about watching phenomenally talented people do things phenomenally.
Yeah.
That has to be up there on the list.
Yeah.
Oh. And anybody that's ever tried to do anything resembling that has to appreciate how difficult that is, right?
Yes, I have to think so. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. That's a good
thing. So, yeah, I mean, that was it. I would say I saw my first O's game of the year in person. That was exciting. But then, 2 days later, I saw... Well, first I got a pretty sweet figurine that's Jason Wirth and his dog. It doesn't bobble, so it's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
It's a figurine.
Yeah. But then, the debut of Lucas Giolito.
How do you feel about the kind of rise of figurines relative to bobbleheads? Because I've noticed this has been happening.
Not great. Bobbleheads are way better. It's fact. I guess the one thing that the figurine does give you is a little more leeway to do cool stuff with it, like this at the dog, and it's probably harder to do a double bobble kind of thing. But bobbleheads, it's no contest.
How old are you? Oh, man. Are you in some kind of trouble with the lodger?
They're coming to steal your bobble dog.
So you got to see somebody pitch or something?
So the debut of Lucas Giolito, which was a lot different than the debut of Steven Strasburg, I would say. First, the game was rain delayed. It started an hour late, and then there was an hour and a half rain delay in the middle, so Giolito only pitched 4 innings, so that was disappointing. And I think he only struck out one person, which is, 14 less than Steven Strasburg on his debut. But it was fun. It was exciting. And he was pitching against Harvey. It was good.
That's a nice. Yeah, that's a really solid game. And I hope you managed to make it through the traffic.
Yes, that's the nice part about living two blocks from the stadium, because since the game is so late and this DC is going to DC, that Metro stops running at last train out at 11:20, and I think the game ended at like 12:10, so some people had a little bit of trouble getting home.
Waka waka. It's a JV city if I've ever heard one, Radium.
Yeah, my God. You're, all right, well, got to fun to move Jared to a real city. In the meantime...
I'll defend DC to the death. It is one of our very few flaws.
The only one. Okay. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, thanks again and have a great day.